Even if you haven't heard about Stephen Thomas, perhaps you've seen his work. He was one of the great pioneers of public art in Atlanta. The City of Atlanta Office of Cultural Affairs and the Stephen Thomas Museum have teamed up to present programs over the summer celebrating the artist, who was active in Atlanta from 1930 up until his death in 1990. Lois Reitzes spoke with Stephen Thomas's daughter, Lisa Connor, and Kevin Sipp, curator of Gallery 72, which will exhibit some of Thomas's work this summer.
The programming is bringing more awareness to Stephen Thomas. But for those unfamiliar with him, what are the pieces Atlantans might recognize?
The most significant one they would recognize is the Trilon Fountain sculpture, which is located at Peachtree Street at 15th Street next to Colony Square. Everybody's probably seen it, but very few people really know who made it.
He was a sculptor. How would you describe his style?
I would describe it as a modernist style. He worked in various styles. He could do representational. He could do abstraction. But the works that were the most expressive of Stephen that I've seen are the ones that kind of floated between those two schools. And just the way he would be able to take the human form and twist it into the most expressive mannerisms through that, I would probably put him in the modernist school, if I could say so.
I think you're right on, Kevin, because he actually was studying sculpture in 1920 in Munich at the Academy of Fine Arts, and he had the opportunity of exhibiting at the Glass Palace in Munich alongside people like Picasso, Matisse, and Edvard Munch. And he came really right out of the modern movement, but his training at the Academy was in classical sculpture.
I believe he said that in order to be art, it must have a philosophy. Would you elaborate?
I think he came out of an era when he probably thought that just straight illustration, you know, was illustrating some object or subject, whereas an artist, a fine artist, would take it deeper than that. He certainly did. He was a kind of a philosopher himself. He studied all the great philosophers and religions of the world, and they played a tremendous part in his work and sometimes even in his public works. Of course, when he was doing commissioned to do public works, he had to do what the person hiring him wanted to have done. But he, for instance, he admired strong women, and whenever he could, he would put a really strong woman in the middle of whatever he was doing.
Was your mother among them?
She was. She was a very quiet person, but she was truly his muse, and she was a pillar of strength. They were married for 56 years when he died, and they married after knowing each other for 1 month. So somehow they knew the minute they met each other that for both of them, he was a young German sculptor in Atlanta, and she was a City of Atlanta school teacher, and there was something that happened. They looked at each other, and that was it.
Yeah, and I would add to that, when you talk about the idea of philosophy, I think the artists that impact the world the most and impacted me have been artists who had a philosophy, artists who had a vision about what their art could do to transform people in the world. And I look across the spectrum of artists around the world, here in America, in the African-American tradition and the American tradition in general, and especially in the world tradition, those artists that really were able to put their voice in whatever commissions they had that would kind of reveal what they thought about the world were the artists we end up remembering the most, I believe.
Stephen Thomas was born in Germany. You mentioned he studied in Munich. How did he arrive in Atlanta?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. He, growing up in Germany, read a lot of pulp fiction about the American West. It was very popular to read about cowboys and Indians all over Europe, actually, in the early part of the 20th century. And he had always wanted to come to America, but he was at the point where he wanted to, as he used to say, seek his fortune. And seek personal freedom. So he wanted to come to America, and he was able to find a sponsor who sponsored him. So he came alone. No one else in his family immigrated. And he worked on one of the large estates at Palm Beach under another sculptor. He traveled around a little bit. By now, it's 1929, so you know what happened in that year. And so he went back to Germany for just a few months, but said, no, I'm going to be an American citizen. So he came back and traveled around, spent some time in Alabama, somehow was able to get a few commissions of dignitaries in Alabama, and somebody met him and said, no, you need to go to Atlanta if you're going to stay in the South. So he came to Atlanta and lived on William Street with this man that took him under his wing, who was an accountant. My mother was a school teacher still living at home with her parents on 14th Street. So he lived around the corner, and that's how they met. But that's how he got to Atlanta, you know, mm-hmm. just could have been anyway, could have gone back to Germany and never come back.
He wanted to finish the Confederate Memorial on the side of Stone Mountain, but then ended up making his own.
That's true.
What happened there?
Well, his idea, his favorite idea for the mountain was something called the Man-Child, or a mother and child, or the New South. He wanted to do a mother holding a child that had the head of an adult man. And the idea behind that was the mother was the Union, and the child was the New South. But of course, you know, they didn't want anything like that. So he said, I'm done with commissions. I'm going to do my own thing. And he did a huge monument to the Brotherhood of Man. And he felt like that was a better thing to do. That was his monument.
Can we consider that his commentary on the Confederacy?
Well, he felt like that it should be a coming together, you know, rather than continuing this idea of, you know, glorifying something that was gone.
And that's what I think is so wonderful about it. His philosophy comes out in that type of act mm-hmm. as well. You see someone who was looking at the South he was coming into, of course, many years after the Civil War, but still seeing that the Civil War is being fought philosophically and in reality in many ways. And yet he wanted to speak to this idea of America being this place of reconciliation and progress. And I think that really speaks volumes to who he was as a person and an artist.
Before Stephen Thomas, was there a public art presence in Atlanta?
Yes. I mean, there have been many public art commissions in Atlanta over the years. And Atlanta right now has a pretty large inventory of public works. And also you have to look at the fact that the state capitol was also commissioning arts that ended up around the city of Atlanta as well. So, but when you look at the breadth and the number of public art pieces, Stephen was probably one of the most active artists out there working in various commissions in the early days. By the time he had given up doing commissions in the 60s, I believe you say?
Late 50s,
yeah.
60, right.
By that time, you had the general municipal commissions for public art monuments throughout the city of Atlanta. But it really took off as well under Maynard Jackson in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And I think when Maynard Jackson came into office and his commitment to public art and artists in general really created a kind of renaissance for public art in Atlanta.
So would you say that that was one of the greatest contributions of Stephen Thomas, was establishing the importance of public art that was championed by Maynard Jackson later on?
I would say so. When you look at how the Trilon sculpture ended up at the corner of Peachtree and 15th, almost as a gift to the city.
He did give it to the city.
Mm-hmm. And the city being open enough to accept that gift mm-hmm. and understanding, once again, the philosophy of Stephen and his impact, not only as an artist, but as a mentor to other artists as well. I mean, you look at artists like George Beasley, who was at Georgia State University as a professor for many years. When Stephen stopped making art, he gave all his tools to Georgia State University. And though that was the type of person he was. So the Trilon sculpture being gifted to the city was a basically a testament to who he was and how important he thought public art was to transforming the people who viewed it.
When you look back on Stephen Thomas's body of work, in addition to the Trilon, what pieces stand out most?
I would say the works that champion particularly strong women. You know, that he, my mother was a very strong person. She was quiet, but she was incredibly strong and a brilliant person in her own right. But he would support women that he knew in what they were trying to do early on, whether it was starting a business or whatever they were doing, just to champion them. He did a portrait of George Sand, which is a Sand, I think you say in French, but he started out to do a portrait of Chopin. And the more he read, he was reading a biography, and the more he read, he was introduced to George Sand. And he said, gosh, she's a lot more interesting. So he had started this portrait of Chopin, and so he painted right over Chopin and did George Sand. And she is in a private collection now. We just love that portrait.
Lisa Connor, Kevin Sipp, thank you very much. And congratulations on this milestone for Stephen Thomas.
Thank you for having us.